Eagles Entertainment.
With the 13th pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select...
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by LifeBrand. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and the All-Star Game circuit, well, it begins this week. The East-West Shrine Bowl kicks off in Las Vegas later this week, and we're going to get into that here in a little bit in Draft Buzz, where we cover some of our early takeaways for what we could see here in Las Vegas, the Shrine Bowl. We'll talk through some announcements for the Senior Bowl, and then... with Dane Brugler, we're going to go through his top 15 position rankings. We talked through it a little bit. I've got 15 takeaways from Dane's top 15 article. So we're going to get into that here in Draft Buzz. After that, we've got a question from you at home in our draft mailbag. As always, make sure you head on over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating, leave us a comment. If you've got a question or mock draft, position rankings, anything specific to this class or to the process, leave it there. We'll answer it here in an upcoming show. That said, let's get with Dane Brugler. It's time now for Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, well, excited to start things off here with Dane Brugler in Draft Buzz. And Dane, before we get into your positional rankings, your top 15 that just dropped over at The Athletic, we got a little bit of news from the All-Star Game circuit. And like I mentioned at the top of the show, the Shrine Bowl out in Las Vegas starts this week. So real quickly, before we do a full preview later in the week, I wanted to kind of get your sense on a name from each side of the football that you think we'll be hearing most about as practices kind of get underway out in Las Vegas. I'll let you go first. A player on offense you think we'll be hearing about from out in the desert?
I can't go with just one. I'm down to at least two. And I think it starts with A.T. Perry for me, who has outstanding size and length. But he's an agile-footed route runner. I think there's some fluidity to his movements. He can, he just does a really nice job with his depth. He does a nice job moving the chains, a very good route runner, especially in zone. He finds the void, but he can also match up against man. I just think there's a lot there with A.T. Perry. I'm just very surprised. I don't know if he did get an invite to the Senior Bowl or not. The same thing with Luke Schoonmaker from the tight end from Michigan, who I think is a top seven tight end in this draft. He is a guy that is a little bit older. He's a high school quarterback, made the move to tight end, has athleticism, can catch the ball downfield. He's banged up a little bit this year, but if he's healthy, he's a guy that should go somewhere on day two.
For me, there is a wide receiver, also another one there in Las Vegas at the Shrine Bowl that is getting a lot of buzz. You'll see plenty of mock drafts out there with Zay Flowers, the wide receiver from Boston College in the back end of round one. He's a guy that's been a four-year contributor for the Eagles up there at BC. He's dealt with some injuries over the course of his career, but was healthy this year. There were just injuries around him in that offense, and so the production kind of suffered a little bit for him. But Zay Flowers is a guy that has proven he could be a three-level threat. He's got some dynamic qualities to his game. I'm interested to see what he looks like in an isolated environment out in Las Vegas. It should be telling for him. And I know he'll be playing for the New England Patriots coaching staff out there in Las Vegas as well. So something to watch there in terms of who his future team could be. How about on defense? Is there a player or two that you'll have your eye on out there?
A couple of these corners are really intriguing. I like Nick Jones from Ball State as a sleeper that people might know more about coming out of this week. And then also, I'm really eager to see Travius Hodges-Tomlinson. How does he hold up in one-on-ones? This guy is as tough as they get. He plays with twitch. He's got speed, but he's 5'7 and a half, 177 pounds, under 30-inch arms. Those are the numbers I have. We'll see official weigh-ins, what he comes in at, if he's maybe a little more generous than that or not, but he's not a big player. And how does he hold up in one-on-ones against an A.T. Perry, going up against some of these other wide receivers that they have there who have some size? We know the size. We know he's small, but can he do enough during this draft process to convince teams that, hey, I can overcome this, I play bigger than I look? And it starts, this week with the Shrine game.
One player for me also sticking in the secondary is Florida safety Trey Dean, who has a corner background. He's got a nickel background. He's played safety the last 2 years. And that's a very useful skill set in today's NFL. There are a lot of safeties, in this class, we'll get into that a little bit later, that I feel present a very useful skill set for the way the teams want to be able to play. And I think Trey Dean is one of those guys. You love a safety with a corner background, a guy that's got position flex to be able to come down, play over the slot, match up matchup against tight ends potentially, and I do think Trey Dean can offer that. So, yeah, a handful of players, and again, we'll dive a little bit deeper into some of the players out there in Las Vegas at the Shrine Bowl later this week. Let's now also turn our attention to the Senior Bowl, which kicks off next Tuesday down in Mobile, Alabama, Dane, and the Senior Bowl just made a couple additions here in just these last couple days. On Monday morning, Tennessee quarterback Hendon Hooker and Georgia guard Warren McClendon both announced that they are going to the Senior Bowl. We'll talk through Hendon Hooker, obviously a guy that caught the college football world on fire with the way he played in the first half of the season, suffered an injury in the final weeks of the season, and I can't imagine that he's going to be playing down there in Mobile, but will be in attendance.
Yeah, and we've seen this before. Aaron Murray maybe did this where he had a late injury, but he still came and, yep, you know, interacted with coaches and teammates. And, you know, that's what you want to see. You know, still take advantage of the week, even though you can't be on the field. But for Hendon Hooker, you know, we haven't seen him almost 2 months now on the field. And so for him just to get back out there will be good for him. And then with Warren McClendon, you know, I some like him better inside at guard. He played a lot of right tackle for Georgia. There are times where his balance is off, and you know, the mobility looks it's average. You know, he's late to swing his hips, but you know, he just does enough. But I like when you know, he does a nice job adjusting on the move, where he can roll his hips and create movement at contact and run game. He does a nice job against pass rushers, so he's getting proper depth and taking away those angles. So Warren McClendon's a player that I graded somewhere early day three, and you know, getting a chance to go to the Senior Bowl, we'll see if they play him at guard or tackle.
Yep.
But that'll be a chance for him to help himself.
All right, so I want to now take a look at your top 15, which dropped over at The Athletic earlier this week. And we'll kind of do this the same way we talked about through your mock draft. I just got a bunch of follow-up questions. I thought the best way to do it is you did a top 15 at every position. I'll give you 15 takeaways that I've got from this list. And we'll start at the top with quarterback. You know, you've got Bryce Young at number one, Ohio State's C.J. Stroud at number two, Will Levis from Kentucky at number three. I think that's important to note, too, based off the conversation we had last week. You had Will Levis at number two coming off the board on the mock draft, CJ Stroud at three, and that's the difference between your positional rankings versus what you hear for the mock draft. So I wanted to make that point. But also, you talked about Jake Haener at number seven, the quarterback from Fresno State. We'll see him next week down in Mobile. You said that if you had to pick a Brock Purdy in this year's class, that it would be him. So I want to ask you, what is it that separates Jake Haener from guys like Clayton Toon, Max Duggan from TCU, Tyson Bagent from up here at Shepherd, some of these other guys there on the back end of that top 10 that kind of have that skill set as like an undersized, scrappy, game manager type? What is it that separates Jake Haener from that group?
You know, I just think that when you look at the mental makeup, you look at a competitive toughness, it doesn't like to turn the ball over. He understands how to compensate for an average physical skill set, whether that's with passing anticipation, accuracy. You know, there's a lot that you point to and say, hey, that's going to translate. And there are some teams that think he's undraftable. Now there are other teams that say, hey, I see what you're seeing. And, you know, we think that he's also in that mid-round conversation. So opinions are split on where Jake Haener should be drafted, but if at all. But I don't know. I just watching him, especially, you know, you go back to last year against that UCLA game. And really he's, you know, he playing in the Mountain West. He's played five career games against Pac-12 opponents. In those games, he's averaging over 300 yards per game. He's averaging almost 68% completions. His eight total touchdowns in those games. So even when he's going up against, you know, quote unquote better competition, he rises to the occasion. And so I think there's a lot there with Jake Haener that I'm going to bet on as a guy. I want my quarterback room. I want as a backup. He's going to be unflappable if he has to be pushed out there like a Brock Purdy has been. And so, you know, I also really like Clayton Toon. I also like Aiden O'Connell. I think those guys are all going to be backups in this league. But something about Jake Haener, I put my money on him.
Moving over to the running back position, going through this exercise, what are your thoughts overall on this running back class? Obviously, there's a lot of talent at the top, right? We know Bijan Robinson, a guy that most believe will be a first-round pick. Jahmyr Gibbs from Alabama, another guy people think could go in the first round. Devin Achane from Texas A&M, a player that's one of the more dynamic playmakers in the country, has some versatility. You have him at number three. After that, you get to 4-5-6. You have Zach Charbonnet from UCLA, Zach Evans from Ole Miss, Tank Bigsby from Auburn. Do you think those guys slide into day two, or do you think they're more day three? I feel like there's a little bit of a drop-off there at that position. What are your thoughts when you look at how things stack up?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that Bijan is the top guy. Jahmyr Gibbs is not far behind. And I don't think Achane is that far behind Gibbs. And then that's where it gets interesting, where Zach Charbonnet is so, so talented with his balance, with his vision, very good as a pass catcher. Just you wish he was a little more dynamic. You wish he had a little more burst. And that's something that in the NFL will be highlighted a little bit. And because of that, that might knock him out of the top 75. But I still think he has a good chance to go third round. Zach Evans is so, so talented, but you know, he's very inconsistent. He's a guy that just there's parts of his profile that you worry about. You could probably say the same thing about Tank Bigsby, who again has a lot of talent, but his vision was a little bit disappointing after I got done studying his tape. But speed, power, that's going to be enough to carve out a role in the NFL. That second and third tiers of running backs are, I think, going to be fluid because you've got guys like Rashawn Johnson from Texas who very well could end up on day two with everything that he offers from special teams to, what he brings in the locker room to a third down role. There's a lot of value in a guy like Rashawn Johnson. Tyjae Spears, I did not expect to like as much as I did. Because I really don't love under 200-pound backs, but he is really dynamic, and he did it consistently throughout the last 2 years. And you could even go to Dwayne McBride with his contact balance, just not a fast player. Go to Kendre Miller from TCU and the way he played this year, bringing power, but also bringing quickness. I'm a big fan of Eric Gray from Oklahoma, how low he plays to the ground and his quickness. So, it's just a really interesting group to stack and try to figure out where they're going to end up. And so I do think that this list will fluctuate a little bit, but this is where I felt good at this point in the process.
Looking at wide receiver, I want to start at the top of the list there. You have Jordan Addison from USC at wide receiver one, ahead of TCU's Quentin Johnson, ahead of Ohio State's Jackson Smith and Jigba. Why Addison at one ahead of those two guys?
I just feel the best about him as a route runner, about playing across the formation, about being able to help me pretty quickly in the NFL, where I like Quentin Johnston. The talent is ridiculous. 6'4", 215, going to run the 4.4s, going to jump really well. The tracking skills are great. I worry about some of the separation at the top of his routes. I worry about how raw he is in areas, and it's just going to take a little bit more time with him. Still, you bet on that talent all day. Jackson Smith at Jigba is not going to run great, but he's such a crafty route runner. The ball skills are terrific. He's going to be a slot receiver in this league for a long time. I think all three of those guys should be considered in the first round. I tweeted this last week. I think this is a wide receiver class that a lot of teams are going to feel comfortable waiting on, because that second and third rounds, I think there's a lot of interesting players, guys like Tyler Scott from Cincinnati. We mentioned A.T. Perry and Zay Flowers who are going to be at the Shrine Game. Even going into Kayshon Boutte and Rashee Rice and Jalen Hyatt, I think there's a lot more receivers that teams are going to feel comfortable about waiting for on day two.
Well, it's a perfect segue into my fourth question for you. And just kind of looking at the wide receiver position, the depth does stand out. I would say it is fair to say that this class doesn't wow you as much as some of the other classes we've seen in recent years in terms of not just the top end talent, but also just like the quality of this depth. But there are still a lot of guys, like when you get outside of your top 10, Kayshon Boutte wasn't in your top 10. Parker Washington from Penn State, Marvin Mims from Oklahoma, Dontavian Wicks from Virginia. Those are all guys that, watching over the summer, kind of impressed me. And I was like, oh, okay, I could see this guy being a starting receiver in the NFL. And I do think that, again, that speaks to the depth at this position. Of that group, who is the toughest to leave out of your top 10?
Yeah, and I don't even want to stop it there. I mean, Trey Palmer from Nebraska, I wanted to get in there. You know, Charlie Jones from Purdue, you know, Jaden Reed, Michigan State, Iowa State kid, Hutchinson. I mean, they're even outside that top 15. Yeah, there are more receivers that you feel like at least have an argument why they should be considered one of the top 10 or 12 receivers in this class. You know, Parker Washington, and it's the Penn State receiver. That Ohio State tape is just burned into my memory. And, you know, it wasn't always at that level in every tape, but doing what he did against the Buckeyes was just so much fun to watch him just go to work. After the catch, he looks like a running back breaking tackles. I think there's a lot of ability there because he's coming off the injury. So, you know, not sure what the pre-draft process is going to look like for him exactly in terms of working out at the combine and how healthy will he be for pro day, things like that. But Parker Washington's a really good player.
So I want to go to the tight end position here for question number five and really look at the guys at the top. I've got a question about two of those Pac-12 players, two of your top four. Luke Musgrave from Oregon State, he's at number two. Yeah. Dalton Kincaid from Utah, he's at number four. Personally, I would flip those two guys, but I want you to sell me on why you have it that way.
It just depends what you want, right? Yeah. I mean, I think that and really with these top four guys, Michael Mayer at one, if you are looking for the best combo tight end who's going to line up in line, going to win over the middle of the field, going to win contested situations, Michael Mayer is probably your guy. If you're looking for more of an athlete who can run, but it can also block, Luke Musgrave, I think, fits that mold. If you're looking for just a dominating blocker, but it can give you something, it's got upside in the passing game, Darnell Washington, come on down. And then Dalton Kincaid, I think, might be the best pure pass catcher of the four. And if that's what you're, if you're looking for, you know, a guy that's going to be a slot receiver basically for you, I think that's Dalton Kincaid. So it just comes down to what you want, what you're looking for your offense. And I think you can make an argument for any of those four to be considered as the top tight end on the board because of what they offer. And just it's just a little bit different from guy to guy.
For question number six, I was excited to look at the pecking order at offensive tackle. You have it as Ohio State's Paris Johnson at number one, Georgia's Broderick Jones at two, Oklahoma Anton Harrison at number three, Syracuse's Matthew Bergeron at four, and Tennessee tackle Darnell Wright at five with the other Buckeye, DeJuan Jones, at number six. What was the hardest line to draw there? How did that group of six cluster out for you? Do you have them tiered? How do you kind of view those blocks for those six players?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with the first two with Johnson and Jones. They're, you know, clear for me, top 15 guys in this class.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of a drop off. You get Anton Harrison, a little bit of a drop off. And stacking these seniors is a little bit difficult. And most of these guys are going to be at the Senior Bowl, which will be really helpful. But like Matthew Bergeron, Darnell Wright, DeJuan Jones, Wanya Morris, who I think doesn't get enough love. Yeah, I think those four guys. It's an interesting group. I think, you know, you watch Darnell Jones, doesn't not a lot of negatives on his tape. But you know, you watch him in the bowl game against a couple of times when he goes up against Brian Brzee, where the hands, the power, just they're able to get, you know, wear him down, break down that rhythm. And he's able to get into the backfield. But for the most part, Darnell Wright has a lot of things that are going to translate to the NFL. And whether he stays at right tackle, moves inside the guard, he's a good player. The most intriguing of the group is DeJuan Jones. He's a complete outlier in terms of size. He's so big. He's so long. His hands are huge. But obviously, you know, you're sacrificing a little bit of mobility there. Can he do enough to hold up with his balance to be a consistent starting right tackle in the league? Some teams think yes, some teams think no. And, you know, it's just there's not a lot of DeJuan Jones is out there just hanging out. Yeah, this is a really young player. He's still just 21 years old. So I think there's, you know, still learning, getting better. So DeJuan Jones is one of the tougher guys. And I think the Senior Bowl will help maybe break up that group of Bergeron, Wright, Jones, and Morris.
Yeah, and certainly with offensive linemen, the combine workouts will serve a lot for as well. And I kind of feel like that could be a separator for especially guys like Jones and Bergeron because they've got the Senior Bowl and the combine. Bergeron of that group, of that four after Johnson and Jones, I feel like he's the most likely to go in round one would be my guess just based off my study of those guys. guys, but that'll be an interesting group to see how that ends up going from a pecking order standpoint. You also put Northwestern's Peter Skoronski with your interior offensive line rankings. So same with Cody Mauch from North Dakota State. You had both guys ahead of Osiris Torrance from Florida, who many have pegged as a potential first-round pick. So what went into thinking, I guess, with all of that, both Mauch and Skoronski going inside to guard, and then Torrance as well being at number three with that trio?
Yeah, and this is a case of, it's not that they can't do it. I would love to see Peter Skoronski get a chance to stay at tackle, wherever he ends up. I just think his ceiling is highest at guard. It's almost like a Zach Martin situation where, can Zach Martin play tackle in the league? Yeah, I bet he can. You know, longtime left tackle at Notre Dame, I think he'd be fine at tackle in the NFL, but he's a Hall of Fame guard. Skoronski, I think, could play tackle, but I think he's going to be a much better guard in the NFL. So I'm just going to keep him in my interior rankings. A lot of those same things with Cody Mauch as well, who, short arm player, probably going to be under 32.5-inch arms. You know, some of the things you worry about with you just light in the pants, things like that. Cody Mauch has never played center in a game. He practices it on his own.
Okay.
And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, 4 years from now, we're talking about Cody Mauch as the best center from this class. That's at least a realistic outcome, I think.
Yeah.
I think he has that type of ability with his movements, with the way he plays. So I'm keeping him on my interior rankings. But, you know, it's an interesting group because I think that, you know, with this center class not being – I don't have a true top 100 grade on any of these centers. I do think, you know, Joe Tippmann from Wisconsin is my top center at this point in the process. I do think he has a chance to go in the top 100. But I don't think there's a single center that you point to and say, oh, he's a definite day two guy. And that's why maybe a player like Cody Mauch, teams might, even Skoronski, teams might look at him and say, you know, hey, can you snap the ball? You know, yep. What do you look like snap? You know, and because there's going to be teams this offseason that are looking for centers.
Ben Fennell made the point on Twitter this weekend that this year we saw a crazy amount of rookie offensive linemen who started every single game. That was 10. That total was higher than any year in recent memory. That's crazy. Not rookie starters, but guys who started every single game this season. Who are some guys you think could fit that bill here from this class as you went through all your rankings?
Yeah, and obviously where they land plays a big part in this. But, you know, like a guy, Osiris Torrance, who we mentioned, like he's a plug and play right guard for a power team. You know, he has a chance to do that where he's going to be a consistent starter. You know, I think, you know, Jordan McFadden from Clemson, another tackle who I like inside a guard. Have you looked at McFadden?
No, I have not.
I like him. He's a Shrine guy. I think he has a chance to be a pretty good guard.
Okay.
Brayden Daniels from Utah is his experience of being able to play across the line. I mean, his coaches say he has legitimate five position versatility.
Yep.
Brayden Daniels, a guy that I think can find a home as a starter, but also be a chess piece where you move him around that offensive line. So I think he's going to have value at the next level for sure.
You were asked, as we go over the defensive side of the football, you were asked on Twitter about the three deepest positions. You responded edge rusher, corner, and tight end. So I want to ask you, what is it that makes this edge rusher class so special?
Yeah, it starts with Will Anderson, and then, you know, Tyree Wilson's the next guy for me, and then Miles Murphy. Miles Murphy, we could have a long conversation about him because he's, you know, so gifted. And there's so much ability there. Just wish you saw it more often on tape. Lucas Van Ness, a lot of the same things where, you know, you watch his tape, you see power, you see explosion. He absolutely made the right decision coming out. He's an easy first round pick for me. I think a lot of teams feel the same way. It just, you know, how high can he go? Can he go top 15? Can he go top 10? You can't rule it out because there's so much ability there. And when you stack these edge rushers, it could be tough because obviously a guy like Lucas Van Ness, who's 6'5", 270, how do you compare him to a Nolan Smith, who is 6'3", 235? And it's almost like having Jackson Smith and Jigba with Quentin Johnston. Like, they're basically play two different positions. So it could be tough when you're stacking these these edge rushers when there's so many different types and kinds of pass rushers. Isaiah Foskey is very different than what Zach Harrison does compared to what Keon White does compared to what Mike Morris does. So it's just a really crowded group. I feel really good about my top six edge rushers in that order. And then that's where it gets a little dicey in terms of, okay, we're splitting hairs, this guy over this guy, depends on scheme, things like that. But it's just, you know, someone asked me why, oh, why is this guy so low? Well, it's just so loaded. It's hard to, you know, like, you know, Tuia Pulotu, the pass rusher from USC, like he's down there at what, 14? It's tough when you stack these guys and say, you know, it's just one over the other, but it's a position where we have so much depth. I expect it to fluctuate a little bit throughout the process.
Well, with that in mind, my 10th question is, which edge rusher has the ability to rise the most over the course of this pre-draft process? Obviously, the All-Star Games kicking into high gear. We've got Combine Pro Days. Who's the guy that can help himself the most over the next couple months?
You know, I think it is probably Lucas Van Ness, because, you know, he's the guy that didn't start a single game in college. And we have to remember, it's almost like when and I was done this before, A.J. Epinesa, when he, you know, led the Big Ten in sacks, he didn't start that year, right? Because Iowa stays true to their veterans and giving them a chance to start. Lucas Van Ness still played starter level snaps. And so if he tests like he's capable of, you know, he's going to be a guy that inches up, you know, he starts, you know, in November, I tweeted how, or, you know, he was a top 25 guy. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe he's top 20 guy, top 15. And you keep inching him up more and more. The more you watch him, the more you see him move, the more the process goes along. So Lucas Van Ness could definitely be one of those guys. Will McDonald from Iowa State is going to be a really interesting player, because he's, you know, for a fifth-year senior, you just wish you saw more polish and seasoning out of a guy like that. But you know what? He's got almost 35-inch arms, 6'4". The weight will be interesting. He is almost like a basketball body, where he's a little leaner than you want.
Yep.
But there's so much ability there. And so once teams get a chance, you know, like GMs, and really sit down with him and figure out the mental makeup and, you know, how much do you love football, things like that, McDonald could be a guy that moves around a little bit in these rankings.
At defensive tackle, you started off with Jalen Carter from Georgia, Brian Brezzi from Clemson, but then you've got a handful of nose tackles like Siaki Ika from Baylor, Mazi Smith from Michigan, Keanu Benton, Wisconsin, ahead of guys that are more known for their pass rushing, like a Kalijah Kancey from Pitt, the Colby Wooden kid from Auburn. Why is that? Do you feel like those nose tackles are just, you know, head and shoulders above those rushers? Do you feel like those nose tackles might have more value moving forward, and just the way that things are shifting in the NFL is a little bit of both? What are your thought? What's your thought process there?
Yeah, I think that a little bit of all of what you said. And, you know, with the pass rushers, you know, it could be a little bit tough. A guy like Kancey, who is 6 foot, 275. We'll see exactly what he ends up being. You know, there are plays where you see him stack and make plays versus the run, where he's able to shoot gaps, but there are a lot of times where he's just displaced too easily. You worry about the anchor strength matched up one-on-one, you know, playing against a power blocker. You know, there are times where he's, you know, really quick in space, but you get him with any type of contact, get him in congestion, and he's slowed down considerably. And so Kansas is a tough guy to figure out exactly where he should fit. But a team that really needs a nose tackle in the middle of their defensive line, they're going to have some intriguing options with Ika, with Benton. And Benton's a player that I think maybe this was, you know, after Paul Chris was fired and that defense really wanting to play for Jim Leonard, whatever it was, he got better and better as the season went on this year. Another guy who is a younger player for being a senior, you know, he doesn't turn 22 until July. So, you know, you feel like there's upside there as a pass rusher, you know, for a guy that's 315 pounds, got 34-inch arms. I don't know. I think that Benton has a lot of ability that we just haven't even seen yet.
You know, just kind of going through your rankings to the linebacker group, is really kind of fun. There's just a bunch of intriguing names. Either they're like high level athletes with a lot of upside, or just really good football players that I think are ready to play right now. So if you go outside of your top three, who is your favorite one to study for either reason, whether you're talking athleticism or just the preparedness for the NFL? Who is your favorite to study outside of your top three?
Yeah, I mean, I can make a case for Dorian Williams from Tulane, who, you know, runs so well. Now, there are times where I wish you would see it faster and just play with better anticipation. But the range, the speed, he's got a huge wingspan. You know, he might not have the anticipation you want in terms of reading, but when he sees it, boom, he goes and he gets there in a hurry so he can scrape, he can pursue. The upside in coverage is there. So Dorian Williams is really, really intriguing. The guy that's maybe the most fun to watch in terms of just watching a college football player, or watching his college tape, is Ivan Pace from Cincinnati. I mean, if you told me that this guy moonlighted as a UFC fighter, that makes sense. I mean, that's he's so scrappy. He's smaller guy, but he's so strong, especially through his hips, through his core. Very violent play personality. He tackles like a rattlesnake, where he plays low and then he just snaps at you and gets you down on the ground. So that contact balance to play through, play off blocks, and make things happen. But you know what? He's on film, and at Cincinnati, he was basically just a downhill player. So, you know, what do you do with him? He's a tough guy to figure out, because with that size, the lack of length, going to be easily engulfed by blockers at the next level. But can he play in reverse? You know, he's just really unproven in that area. So I've got a lot of questions about Pace. Senior Bowl might help him, might expose him. I don't know. I'm eager to find out.
Question number 13, going to cornerback. KD Ringo from Georgia has been one of the more popular picks for the Eagles in mock drafts, you know, wherever they've been, whether it's been, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12, like that's been a popular pick, but that's around the area. We've seen him in most mock drafts. I know you had him in around your 20s, I believe. It was like 21, 20, something like that, in the mock draft you dropped last week. People might be shocked. He did not make your top five corners in this class for a guy that is viewed as a potential top 10 pick. Why so low on Ringo? What are some of the questions? Or is it more about just the quality at the cornerback spot?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, because this corner class is just so deep. The underclassmen really gave it a boost. And at the top, you know, if you want to put Devin Witherspoon from Illinois as your top corner, I get it. You want to put Joey Porter as your top corner, I get it. For me, it's Christian Gonzalez. So I think there's guys at the top that you really like. Some guys really like Cam Smith, whether it's at the top or just the depth throughout, you know, Emmanuel Forbes in the middle there, guys like, Kelly from Stanford, Clark Phillips, who will be dinged with the size, but is a really good player. So it's just a loaded cornerback class, edge rusher and corner. It's just, there's so many guys that it makes it tough to split hairs between some of them. With Ringo, he's a top 10 pick all day from just a size speed perspective. 6'2", 210, going to run the 4.3s, legit athlete. But he, in terms of anticipating routes, reading what the offense is doing, and being in a position to make plays, he's very, very inconsistent. And in ways, it's kind of similar to Tyson Campbell, who another former Georgia corner who had all the physical traits you wanted, but didn't go in the first round because the technique was a little bit up and down. The awareness wasn't there. The Jags took him with the first pick in the second round, and he's turned out to be a pretty good player for them. He's developed well. Ringo's kind of in a similar boat where it's a really good corner class, and that'll push him down a little bit. But also, he's just raw in areas, and it's a projection. And because you're projecting, he might slip a little bit, but it wouldn't be surprising if he ends up being a really good player in the league, because the physical traits are so impressive.
And then looking at safety, honestly, I was looking at your list, and there were guys outside of your top five that I think could be starters. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, I really like this safety class. There are a lot of guys that I feel like can come in and play an immediate role in the NFL, guys that could turn into three down players. Do you agree with that assessment of this class? Obviously, we know about the blue chip guys, the Brian Branches, and those types at the top of this class, but the depth stood out to me as well.
Yeah, 100%. And this is another position where I think the Senior Bowl will help with guys like Ronnie Hickman and JL Skinner, guys that played a specific role in college. And so there's some questions about, okay, how is he going to translate to more of a post player at the next level? Or, and so like Jartavius Martin out of Illinois, who, you know, I was really high on Kirby Joseph a year ago as being a sleeper at the safety position. Martin's been my guy this year at that position. And he can play corner, could play safety, could play nickel. But even after that, Jamie Robinson from Florida State, undersized, but there's a place for him at the next level. Jair Brown from Penn State, I thought he had a pretty nice senior season, and I thought he'd be higher for me than 9, but it's just how it worked out. But I agree with you. This safety class Besides Brian Branch, I don't know that there's one guy that you point to and saying, I love this guy in the first round. But and even in this, like on day two, how many of these safeties would you say are, you know, I'm not going to use the word locks because the word locks should never be used in an NFL draft conversation. But how many of these safeties do you feel good will be day two picks? And let's say Brian Branch goes in the first round. So anyone besides Brian Branch, how many do you feel good will end up on day two?
Antonio Johnson, if he does not go at the end of round one, I feel like it's a lock day two. After that, in terms of a lock, I think that's a good question. I think then you're just kind of getting into, all right, like rounds 3, 4, 5, that's where the depth really is in the class. Like you get into the JL Skinners, the Jordan Battles, the Jay Wards. You mentioned Jamie Robinson, the Ronnie Hickmans. Like that's where you start getting into those kind of guys. I think that's a fair assessment. That's a good point.
Well, and that's what I, you know, as I mapping this out and figuring, okay, well, you know, does like Jordan Battle, is he going to test well enough to go in the top 75? I don't know. Christopher Smith is a good player, but he's 5'10", under 190 pounds. You know, how each team's going to look at that differently. So it's a really interesting safety class. And a lot of these guys, I think, are going to help out teams next year. But the valuation of where they will fit in the draft is a little difficult.
That's a good point. Last question for you, question number 15. We've already talked about what you felt were the strongest areas. What's the weakest position in this class, or what are the weakest areas of this class?
I do think that, you know, there are different parts of certain positions, like, you know, start with the interior of the offensive line. You know, I mentioned center, how there wasn't a center in this class that's a definitive, you know, top 100 guy. If you include Skoronski and Cody Mock with the interior, all of a sudden it looks a little bit better. But for teams or evaluators that don't, I think it's just a tough guard class. Torrance belongs somewhere in the top 50. Steve Avila, you know, could go day two, but then there, you know, there's a little bit of a drop off, and we're talking about mostly day three players at that point. So the interior of the offensive line, if we're talking about round one receivers, I think, you know, especially the way we've been spoiled the last few years, we had 6 receivers go in the top 23 last year, whatever it was, you know, and this year there's not a single receiver in this draft that is a lock to go top 20 there. And, you know, that's not something we've said about a receiver class in a couple of years. So now I do like the depth on day two. I think there's plenty of receivers that are going to be, you know, helping out NFL teams at this time next year and be solid pros. But compared to what we've been used to, it's a little bit of a tricky class in terms of at the top. And then I'd probably mention linebacker. There's some good players, but how many? It's kind of like the safety conversation. You know, Drew Sanders, I think, goes first round. Trenton Simpson has a good chance to go first round. Then after that, how many are you're looking at as, you know, for sure going on day two? You know, I think Jack Campbell probably does. I still like Henry Toto'o pretty well. Nick Herbig is interesting, but he's a tough projection. It's another class where, you know, not a lot of true, you know, or, you know, you look at day two picks and say, yeah, they're definitely going to go that high. We're looking at more third, fourth, fifth round type of value.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And obviously a lot of things will be moving around as you continue to do more film work on these guys and we start to get more intel on how teams feel, how all the testing, and obviously the All-Star games in the next couple of weeks. Dane, always appreciate your time here on the Journey of the Draft podcast. We'll be talking to you next week. Next time we talk to you, you'll be down in Mobile, Alabama.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, so this week here on Draft Mailbag, I wanted to check in. We got a question from Deuce Sennett, who left a 5-star review. He's looking for some hidden gems. And Deuce Sennett says, love the show as always, Fran. Last year, you gave us Baylor safety Jalen Petrie as someone who you felt should skyrocket up the draft boards as we started moving through the draft process. You nailed that one. Who is someone that is this year who is not sitting at the part of the draft early on, but who could be there by the end of April? Thanks, and go Birds. Well, Deuce Sennett, thank you. I mean, Jalen Petrie was a favorite of mine. Ended up being an early second round pick by Houston. Started every game this year. Bunch of missed tackles. He's got to clean those up, but it was a productive player, a really active player in that Houston defense. Two guys for me that I think are outside of most mock drafts that I feel like we'll be talking about maybe on the back end of mock drafts or certainly in like the top 50 by the time we get to, you know, March, April. I would certainly start with Nolan Smith, the Georgia pass rusher. This is a guy that was highly regarded coming into the year. The production has not always been there, but this is A-plus off the field. He was a former big-time recruit. He's a little bit undersized, but then got hurt midway through the year, and so the injury could play a part here, but I really like Nolan Smith's tape, and this was going back to last year when the production wasn't always there. This year, you look at what he did when he was healthy, he was outstanding for the Georgia Bulldogs up front. So I would say Nolan Smith, the pass rusher there for the Dogs, and then let's go to a lower level of competition. Let's go to the Ivy League. Princeton wide receiver Andre Yoshivas. I said it here on the podcast a few weeks back when I studied this film for the first time. I think he can absolutely be this year's Christian Watson. Christian Watson last year was a late addition to the Senior Bowl. It was like late December when he finally got that invite. He went down to Mobile and was one of the best receivers there. Ended up playing his way into the early part of round two when the Green Bay Packers traded up to take him. And we know the impact he made with that offense this year. I think Yoshivas offers a very similar skill set. He did it at a little bit of a lower level of competition, the Ivy League, compared to where North Dakota State plays, in terms of the Missouri Valley Football Conference. But two very similar players from a size standpoint, a speed standpoint, what they bring to the table. Some of even the flaws with both guys, I think, are definitely present on tape. So I would say Andre Yoshivas is a player you need to learn more about from Princeton, and then Nolan Smith from Georgia, two guys on the opposite end of the spectrum from a buzz standpoint in terms of their overall collegiate aspirations. So do send it. Appreciate the five-star review. Appreciate the question. Again, the best way to reach us, head on over to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a question there in the comment section. We'll answer it here in an upcoming episode. Ben Fennell will be back later this week. Also, we'll do a little bit of a deeper dive into the Shrine Bowl, which again kicks off, I believe Friday is the first practice. So we'll have a lot of action out from the desert Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. The game next Thursday out at the Raider Stadium in Las Vegas, Nevada. Until then, we'll talk to you next time here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand.